Are we ready? Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for coming to our meeting about the parking management plan. My name is Bruce Ambo. I'm the Public Services Director, which means our department handles building, planning, and public works. For those of you that may or may not have noticed, we have handouts that have the presentation in the back. So if you'd like to follow along with the PowerPoint, you can pick the handouts up and back. And we have a sign-in sheet there, too. But good morning again. Thank you for coming. This meeting is really kind of a workshop to talk about the initial results of the parking survey that we've done for the downtown and Embarcadero areas. It's a part of an ongoing process of developing and analyzing information about parking and what some alternative solutions are. And I'll just briefly maybe introduce some of the folks on our team. To my right, I have Charlie Klaus, who's the principal with our consultant team with TPG. We have, of course, if you haven't noticed, we have our mayor and several of our council people and planning commissioners, our planning commission chair. Thank you for coming. And just in terms of our background to this, to give you some sense of how we got to where we are and what the purpose of this whole thing is, the council and the community has been kind of struggling with the issue of parking and circulation on the Embarcadero for quite some time. It's been an issue for a number of years, and it's kind of come around and around. And the last time, and one of the key things that were observed through that was, gee, before we get into any kind of a meaningful discussion about parking and circulation on the Embarcadero, one of the boards and all of the boards and commissions observed that we need to have some kind of a solution for the Embarcadero site that the city owns across the street. So in terms of background, the city has what's called an exclusive negotiating agreement in concept to develop or to have a developer provide a conference facility on that site. There, at this point, we just have an agreement to see if we can explore what some solutions are with one another and hopefully come up with an agreement to proceed with a project. And this time we don't have any development that's being proposed, no design plans or anything else. But we can touch on that later. But in answer to the other questions about how we're moving forward, we're trying to address some of the solutions in our setting. And I think we'll find that that project in concept has some exciting opportunities to work into the parking and circulation alternatives for the Embarcadero area. And we can get into that on a project developing parking and lieu fees, too. And so that's one of the other things that came out of the discussion that we had with parking and lieu fees and how to set the parking and lieu fee and the identity by the Coastal Commission of saying that we need to come up with a parking management plan as part of our coastal program. So that gives you a little background. At any time in the presentation, I think if you have some questions, why don't you just catch us here. I guess now would be a good time, Charlie. Or we can take questions at the end. We're going to go through a brief presentation, share this information with you right now, and then the next phase is to discuss some of the alternatives, analyze this information, and discuss alternatives. And if you're interested, hopefully come back at another time to talk and see if you've got some ideas. We may have overlooked some things and talk some more about some directions we may head in. But I guess I'm going to turn it over to Mary Beatty. She's going to get into some of the study, and I believe Charlie's following her too. Thanks.
Good morning, everybody. Again, thank you so much for coming today. Bruce kind of gave a broad overview. I just kind of wanted to focus your attention to this slide. These are what we believe are some of the express purposes and goals of the effort that we're undertaking. The first task is to determine the current status of parking supply and demand in the area, evaluate current parking standards, and modify as appropriate. Part of that will involve not only just reviewing your own current standards, but identify projected costs for perhaps various solution sets, and, of course, educating the community on those costs and what the potential appropriate solutions might be for the Morro Bay area. Okay, to begin, this map shows the study area boundary that was agreed upon with city staff within which we would conduct or perform the study. This boundary is based on the extent of your current parking district and primarily the commercial land uses of the downtown area and Embarcadero area. Within this study area, we also identified and numbered 37 blocks, and you'll see that numbering scheme on some subsequent maps. And those represent the core areas within which we conducted a demand survey, which I'll talk about later. So essentially, when we talk about the Embarcadero area, we're talking about that stretch of property that runs essentially from Morro Rock on the north extreme all the way down to the launch ramp on the south end. And this area is represented by blocks numbered 1 through 10. Then the downtown area we define as that area that is situated above the bluff line, if you will. And those are blocks numbered 11 through 37. So within those numbered blocks, the very first task that we undertook was to take stock of the current or existing conditions, primarily the number of current parking spaces. There were a total of 1,197 for a total parking space count of 2,217. Of that total, the city actually owns, operates, if you will, or manages 73% of those spaces, which is a pretty high percentage, 1,629 spaces. Another aspect of the existing conditions in the area is to consider what sort of public transportation currently exists as an alternative means of accessing your downtown and Embarcadero. Besides the automobile, and of course you're all fully aware of what those are. There's the Morro Bay trolley. We primarily focused on route number one, which serves the downtown and Embarcadero area. There's also that is a fixed route service within the study area and has transfer stops to the RTA regional route and the other trolley number two route within the study area. You also have the Morro Bay Dial-A-Ride service, which is not a fixed route service, but instead is a dial-up service for individual needs and individual routes. Also, you have the RTA, which is your regional bus connection throughout the county that has a transfer station here in the study area. All of these transit services collect fares, and later on, as we move forward with the report, we'll be looking at some of the data on the fare box data for the trolley in particular as part of the financial plan. And of course, this map is just showing the route. Another element of existing conditions is signage. I just want to ask a question. Is there anyone in the room that could tell me approximately how many signs you have that provide directional by arrows to drivers as far as where public or available parking is located? You're right. There's none. You're right. And furthermore, I think you can see reflected in some of these pictures, and we have many more pictures cataloged. I'm just kind of showing you a representation here. You can see there's a great variety of size and color and style, and so a lot of the signage lacks a consistent theme, which maybe contributes to difficulty in identifying the signs or recognizing them quickly. And, of course, because there are no directional signs showing people where parking is located, you'll oftentimes, or what we've already discovered, is there will be a huge availability of parking in different places, probably because people don't know how to get there or aren't aware that they exist. I think the signage, this blue sign, has a nice character. It's colorful. The one obvious easy thing that could probably be added to a sign like that is a directional sign to available parking. And so we'll be looking at how the sign the signage in the area can be enhanced as a way to augment parking access.
And I can tell you that we've come to realize that there's some very distinct sets of circumstances that you all know intimately from living here. The first of which is that we have two distinct areas, the Embarcadero, which has a certain set of characteristics that we found, and also the downtown area, primarily the Main Street and Morro Bay area. So through our process, we did a demand analysis. It started off with survey work, and we completed two different surveys of the current inventory, as Mary talked about. We counted every stall and catalog those with respect to the type and use and who owned them. And then we also did an inventory or survey of demand. That is the number of cars parked during a typical weekday as well as a typical weekend. In this case, not typical, but typical for a summer weekend. And we surveyed 6 hours a day from noon till 6 p.m. That was determined to be the peak period where we have the maximum number of parking movements completed for both weekdays and weekends. We did hourly counts. We went through every stall once an hour to determine what the demand was in that location. And we did a third survey, which is called a duration survey, for the weekend and the weekday in the Embarcadero area only. That determines the amount of turnover, the length of time that an individual car is parked, as well as the amount of turnover that particular stall has during that six-hour period. That's benefit from that data, what the parking count is, as well as the duration. Let's go through kind of a series of slides that talk about the results of that. We looked at demand, we looked at averages, and we also looked at duration for weekday and weekend. So I'll go through the weekday analysis first. You can see typical weekday, this is the average demand during that period. And what we've done, and you can see this in the handouts, but we've categorized it into three categories. Anything between 75% saturation and 85%, we've highlighted in yellow. That's simply to say there's a cautionary amount of demand in that location. We need to pay attention. For 85 to 100%, which we use in the industry as the key point in analysis, the evaluation of parking supply and demand looks at 85% as the point where you need to be concerned, because the turnover process requires some available spaces in that area to allow for somebody pulling out and somebody pulling in to have a reasonable chance of finding a parking stall. And then the last is we've identified blocks that exceed 100%. And ironically, we might ask, how do you park more than 100%? And the answer is we've got people parking in creative ways, and we've actually seen that out there, and I'm sure you all see it every day. But especially in the Embarcadero area, there's a lot of, and I think this is borne out by some of the anecdotal information we've heard, we don't have any real hot spots.
Question.
Yeah.
Is this average weekday, summer, winter, or a combination of both?
It would be average weekday, non-summer. And, you know, what we're trying to do is really create a database that gives us an idea of where the hot spots exist from a geospatial standpoint. You're going to have certain days where it's different. We didn't do an annual average. This is just really a snapshot to highlight where the hot spots are. We also looked at the peak hour. That is, the previous slide was an average over the 6 hours. That kind of gives you a trend or a typical kind of profile. The peak hour gives you an idea of the worst of the worst. So this would be a weekday peak hour. It was defined as between 1 and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You can see that the areas that do show up, primarily in the Embarcadero, and primarily between 75% and 85% saturation. So they're areas of concern, but from a standard, they don't exceed what we would expect out there. We also did some analysis on weekday duration, that is the average parking duration of a vehicle, as well as the number of turnovers for that particular stall during our six-hour period. And we've primarily focused on the Embarcadero again. Oops, I'm sorry. Almost 2 hours in duration on average, and the number of turnovers is around two or less for that particular period. And that's important to note, and in terms of contrast on the weekend, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but there's clearly two different characteristics that are going on. Our suspicion is that this represents more local activity, more employees who might be working in the Embarcadero area, the fishing industry, and some of the other longer duration parking that's going on down there. So you have folks that come down there and maybe park for several hours for work purposes and then leave. And we'll talk a little bit about the difference between that and a weekend in a little bit. Now, moving on to weekend, again, we surveyed during Memorial Day weekend as a way to identify a typical summertime activity. We've done a number of these in the coast area, and summertime is typically the peak season for businesses in and around the coast area, and I think we all know that that's consistent with the Embarcadero and his history down there. So this gives us a better sense of where the hotspots are. And as you can see, the weekend average, again, the average over the 6 hours of survey shows a little different profile. In the Embarcadero, we're starting to see 85% to 100% in the four key blocks along the Embarcadero. And again, from our perspective, when we start seeing 85% saturation, that clearly starts raising some flags that there are parking blocks. We're also seeing some 75% saturation in the downtown core area, and we think that's associated with a combination of intense land uses that get a lot of activity during the weekend and some balance problems with the blocks in terms of the amount of parking in that particular block. Yes, sir.
I see that you have saturation in those four areas, but then on the two ends, as you pointed out, you have some capacity for parking. And I also noted at the beginning of the presentation there was no consideration for pedestrian access to the Embarcadero. Wouldn't that be a factor in accessing these peripheral areas to the more used and more heavily dense?
I think we'll talk a little bit about it in the conclusion section, but I think you're heading in a direction with that comment that we're starting to pick up as far as some of the challenges that we're facing as far as establishing strategies to address these and accessibility to the flanking parking areas is really becoming a key that we're focusing in on, and we'd like to talk a little bit more about that later today. Wanting to focus in on the peak hour of demand during the weekend, and again, this happens to be between 1 and 2 o'clock, we find a little bit more in terms of saturation. In fact, we're getting in these three blocks 100% or more in terms of the saturation. That goes to some of the creative parking that we're seeing out downtown. We've got a couple of blocks that are at least at 75 to 85%. Parking duration, and I want to just use this as a contrast to the weekday data that we provided earlier. You'll see that the average drops substantially We're down towards an hour and a half for the average duration versus about 2 hours, as we saw during the weekday. And the turnover rate, that is the number of times that parking stall turns over in that six-hour period, goes up substantially. Again, I think that's a common characteristic of the more tourist-oriented activities that go on during the weekend, the visitors that come and spend a couple hours or an hour and a half in this case and then leave, and then there's another car that comes right behind them and fills that spot. This data is important because as we start looking at strategies for addressing the shortfall in this area, we may want to explore some options for parking duration and signage and those kinds of things that we'll discuss as we get forward.
So your span of time ended at 6 p.m.?
Right.
So you didn't pick up the dinner rush?
No. No, basically the data sources that we saw historically would suggest that the peaking stopped at about 6 o'clock, that you know, other activities dropped off, and there was still obviously activity down here, but typically that would not be the peak period. Yeah. Here's some of our initial conclusions. The first one is that there isn't really a parking supply problem. We have ample supply, both in terms of the Embarcadero area, when you look at it on a macro scale, an efficient way of managing the supply you have now. It's clear that we have a lot of resources that we can draw on in order to address this in a more low-cost, effective manner. The weekday profile, from our sense, is that it typically is in the Embarcadero. The problem with the Embarcadero is folks coming down midday for lunch or maybe to do a couple of different activities, and that's where the peaking tends to be during the midday, and then it pretty much dissipates. On weekends, we're seeing summer activities as well as special events, and we're aware that you're getting more and more special events within the downtown area, whether it be the Embarcadero or back up into the Main Street Morro Bay area, Morro Bay Boulevard area, and those are things that can be handled through special parking arrangements as we go forward. My one last comment about the conclusions that we're reaching is that there are two distinct areas, and we want to deal with them in different ways. The downtown core is one, and that has a lot of community-wide profile activities as well as some tourist activities. But the Embarcadero is really a unique area, and we want to look at that in a different way than the downtown. And I think by separating those, we can start really opening up a lot of different opportunities for I think we want to break that up into two components. Well, actually, the core area downtown, that's not an issue. It's not part of the mix down there that's causing any kind of stress on the parking, either on street or off street. In the Embarcadero, we think there's two unique profiles going on. Weekday, there's a certain amount of employees that are going on, that are parking down there out of necessity. They need to be down there early in the morning, or they stay late at night. And so there's a profile of employees down there during the weekday that's certainly using some of that parking. And you see that through the duration evaluation, where it's longer term and fewer turnovers. The effect that those employees have in the Embarcadero area during the weekend is somewhat, I think, overwhelmed by the amount of tourist parking that goes on down there. And the tourists obviously are turning the parking stalls over fairly quickly. I mean, those turnover rates that we talked about were very good rates from a tourist-oriented standpoint. And the duration was very short. So that duration suggesting the employees are not the key issue. That said, an employee parking in the Embarcadero area during the weekend does tie up a stall for a longer period of time. And so one of the management strategies that we'll want to discuss as we go forward is ways to provide them with alternative locations that probably aren't in the core part of the Embarcadero, but give them an opportunity to park in a safe and effective manner away from the Embarcadero and open that space up for that 3 turnover rate that we talked about during the weekend. So, again, if we open one up like that, we're basically getting three stalls for the price of one. So that's kind of the strategy we want to look for. Yes, ma'am.
One of the first things that we're going to do next is take a pretty thorough look at what your current parking standards are. Those are largely embodied in your municipal code and have been in effect for quite a while. As part of that review, we're going to compare those to maybe what's going on in other jurisdictions, particularly ones that seem similar in nature to Morro Bay, small coastal communities, and see what their parking standards are, if they're comparable, if they're doing something different that seems to work better. And then we'll be looking just generally at some emerging trends and standards that may be somewhat more cutting edge, that maybe aren't being utilized in a lot of communities, but where they are being utilized are showing promise for being reasonable to deal with, for instance, tourist-oriented types of land uses and activities. And as we look at all of those, we'll be looking at things like employee parking, opportunities for shared parking, standards for mixed-use development, how that may play into the solution set, time-regulated parking, like metered parking, and then solutions and standards for trucks, delivery trucks, loading and unloading, and those kinds of things. And as Charlie mentioned, as far as evaluating parking management strategies, I think we're beginning to see now that there are some different important differences in the activities and the way the downtown functions differently from the Embarcadero. And so a one-size-fits-all approach solution may not be right. And so we'll look into that. And of course, then trying to segregate the strategies that work better for downtown. From things I mentioned earlier, we'll be looking at perhaps a more effective signage program, which, again, could be a relatively low-cost way to help direct the demand to where the supply actually exists. That's also, said differently, kind of a way to make available parking more accessible, easier to find. I mentioned we'll be looking at approaches for encouraging shared parking, where you have land uses that maybe have peak activities during the day, and try to get those spaces freed up for those uses. But maybe at other time of day where they don't need those spaces, we can direct demand from other uses there and share the parking. As we move forward, this is sort of the schedule that we talked about with staff. Following all of the literature search that we do and evaluation of existing peer and emerging trends and whatnot, we'll be ready hopefully in October to present to staff our conclusions about and our assessments about options that are available. In November, we'd like to move on then to the action or the financial plan, the financial component, evaluating the costs and whatnot of implementing certain alternatives. And then from that, identifying an action plan that is workable and feasible for Morro Bay. Then we will plan to have a completed draft report. And actually, as we've been proceeding, we're going to be feeding certain parts of the report to staff as a As we begin to wrap up, just remind you again, apparently there are microphones put around the room. This is the point in the presentation where we want to elicit dialogue amongst all of us here and hear your comments and feedback about our presentation and about what you perceive as the parking challenges in Morro Bay. I think I'd like to try to keep the dialogue segmented a little bit according to what's on the screen here. We want to start with what you think some of the current issues are, and we'd like to first focus those on the Embarcadero. We'll try to keep your comments separated just for nothing else, just for ease of following a train of thought. And we have Ashley here who's going to try to keep your comments cataloged. Sorry. Yes.
Based on what you touched on earlier, will we have statistics for weekday parking on the Embarcadero summer versus winter? Because basically the population down here doubles in the summer on weekdays as near as I can tell compared to the winter. So I'm having a little trouble with what we saw in the presentation so far, seeing if how valid the various stress blocks and the percentage of demand is for one versus the other. And so I'm just wondering if we're going to have a breakout saying this is what the summer is like. This basically July and August, and the waterfront people, correct me if I'm wrong, but July and August have a lot more pressure circulation, I think, and even employee parking probably.
Right. I'd like to add to that, too. I'd like to stress that one of the things that we probably didn't emphasize enough is that we're only experiencing those conditions a couple hours out of the day, two months out of the year, and if you will, on a peak period. That means on the weekends, a couple days of the week. I would venture to guess that we're talking about it getting close to experiencing isolated problems on one or two blocks, probably about 10 or 20 days out of the year. The remainder of the time, the other 95% of the time, we're not experiencing any problems. So what we tried to do is just go right to the peak season and study the peak. And we're saying that's representative for any year. So that's one of the basic assumptions that we hope everybody can buy into, that's the characteristic of this.
Are you saying that the survey done over Memorial Day weekend is representative of what's going on during this week in July?
Go ahead, Charlie.
The process of collecting data is really twofold. One is to help us as your consultant team understand what the current conditions are out there. And so by sampling a weekday and a weekend during a holiday, what we're trying to do is get a snapshot in time of what the issues are. They don't necessarily represent every weekend. The purpose of the survey is to give us a better sense of where the pressure points are. The other part of that process is to understand that the summer lasts between Memorial Day and Labor Day, and so you have a finite number of weekends during that period where you have that kind of stress. You'll have stress in other periods of time, special events, selected weekends during the winter, but typically when we go through coastal communities, we find that the summer is really where the concern is. And again, it just helps us understand where the pressure points are and how to develop strategies to address those. It's not meant to represent every possible combination of holiday weekends or every possible combination of weekday activities, but generally just an idea of where the pressure points are. You clearly have characteristics here that are different in the winter than they are in the summer. But again, the summer is only about 12 weekends a year. So we need to keep that in context, as Bruce talks about. It's a very limited number of hours of the year. Yes, sir.
Sometimes less than an hour and a half. You know, so basically the rotation, you would never I'm not going to say never, but that parking lot would hardly ever be full on 4th of July. And your whole parking problem, the cars on the Embarcadero would be smoother. And we don't have a parking lot. We just need to bring and organize the employees on the Embarcadero. And I'm one of the guilty parties.
Yeah, I think those are great ideas, and those are some of the things we're starting to see as we go through the data. Yes, sir.
Sorry, I just put them up.
With regard to the that's exactly why I asked that.
As far as the Embarcadero, one of the things I think is really important not to ignore is the fact that we have areas, waterfront areas, which are currently being devoted to parking. And I think it's important to look at developing sufficient additional capacity that those areas can be devoted to more appropriate uses, either commercial or pedestrian. I mean, performance out of the year are critically important to the businesses here on the Embarcadero. And everybody who can't find a place to park and goes someplace else is money out of their pocket during that peak season. So even though it's a relatively limited duration of time, it's a very important economic period of time for the business.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think your first point about setting the stage for future development is really critical, as Mary talked about, reviewing the current standards, looking at it in terms of how best to create a set that works for the Embarcadero and a set that works for downtown. And really our goal is to kind of unchain the parking responsibilities and allow development to go forward in a very timely and efficient manner, because a lot of times parking becomes an impediment to development. We don't want to leave you with that. Yes, sir.
Well, you just touched on the point that I think is sort of like the elephant that's been in the middle of the room for a lot of people, and that is that we currently have standards when new development goes in that we charge them in lieu parking fees. And these fees have gone up astronomically. Mm-hmm. And what happens is people don't do development. They say we can't afford to do that. So there's this big disincentive for people to develop. What we had here today was a picture of reality on the ground today, and it seems to be very good from my perspective. But what we really have to do, the big issue for a lot of people, is how do we deal with in-lieu parking? How can we, if possible, get rid of that? How can we spread that burden out? How do we do that? Because we have basically two classes of businesses in town right now. Those that were here a long time ago before our last parking management plan, what happened there was they were grandfathered in. You know, we have businesses that have no before, fill in the blank, 20, 30, 40, $200,000, $400,000 for in-lieu parking, and some people say yes, and some people throw their hands up and say no. So the critical issue for a lot of people is how do we get beyond that, and how do we get to a fairly shared burden and something that works. I think the picture I saw today was that our problem is not as critical as many people perceive it as, and that our in-lieu parking fees are disproportionate and working against the best interests of the community in terms of people being willing to invest in the community with new businesses and the like.
Yeah, and I think you're heading in a direction that we see the next step in the process for us is to really do a further evaluation of how you develop parking currently, both in terms of your standards and in terms of opportunities to do shared parking, better calibration of the requirements, and quite frankly, in-lieu fees are a great tool to have in your toolbox because it does allow certain projects to go forward that may not have a lot or parcel big enough to allow them to do the development of parking on site. So it is something that you want to keep, whether the fee right now is correct or not. I mean, that's part of the process we want to go through. But I think the application of the in-lieu fee is really a good tool to allow certain projects to go forward. The aggregating up, if you will, of parking that's shared by a number of people. Mary talked about shared parking standards. This is clearly something I think we want to bring to you folks to have further discussions at the next interface to really talk about the idea that there are a whole lot of layer cakes in terms of how parking's used, and we want to use parking really 24 hours a day in order to make it more cost effective so that
how much will the loss of those two spaces, I mean, how did you figure that into your overall impact? Was it included as available parking? And if it's no longer available, what is that going to do in your numbers and your figures there and the impacts?
we did include available parking in the inventory. So if it's on the ground and it's available, both public and private, we did include that in the supply and demand analysis.
So if those two lots go away, we're going to see a real big change.
Well, I think the issue of changes to particular lots is one that on a project-by-project basis you're going to want to evaluate, because it may be beneficial to have certain changes to certain parking profiles depending on the lot and depending on the project that's being proposed. Whether those go away or not go away, or whether they're augmented with additional parking through a development process, I think that's something that you're going to need to evaluate. I think the two you're talking about are in the area of the hotel convention center, and I think that particular project is going to come forward with its own parking profile, and
take away the public. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, it may. We don't know that. I mean, it may be a combination of public and private at the end of the day that allows full use of those parking stalls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and so the net impact may be a positive after all said and done. Where you have the ability to use those stalls from a public standpoint during certain times of the day, and other stalls are used by the hotel convention center in off-peak periods. A good example, we did a project in Visalia where the city built a 400-stall parking garage across the street from the convention center. Was dining hours. During the day, when the convention center had a large convention or the downtown businesses needed it, those stalls were available. So in essence, rather than having a parking structure that was empty from 5 o'clock at night till 7 o'clock in the morning, that structure was being used virtually all day long. So that would be very similar, perhaps, to what you're suggesting at the convention center hotel project here, where certain stalls are not used by the convention center hotel all the time. And so on the weekend, for example, that may be made available to the Embarcadero and augment the tourist parking while they're shopping or dining or doing whatever they might be doing in the Embarcadero area. And then at night, the hotel would use them for their patrons. So you can actually use a stall a number of times during the day and get more parking out of one stall than you might have currently. So that I think, is a profile example that we will have to look at as part of a hotel convention proposal or any proposal.
Yeah, I'd like to add a little bit to what Charlie said. In the way I see it, it's an opportunity to get a more efficient use of parking and net out more parking than we had, because the peak characteristics for conferencing are midweek, and the peak characteristics for our weekends are on a weekend. So if we can, what that would say to us as a community is maybe we need to have an arrangement that some of that parking would be reserved for public parking, because they're going to park for all of the conference space. But when they're not using it, we could use it on our peak, and we could actually net out more parking down here with that project, just especially if it's a conference center.
But it seems to me this needs to be addressed specifically in your report to see whether this is a good idea or not. I'm not sure it is or not. What are the other ramifications of fatal flaws? But it seems to me you need to address that.
Yeah, we'll look at metered parking. I think there's a fairly lengthy discussion that we need to have within the context of the community to decide whether that's really applicable in that location. But that certainly is, not only from a parking control standpoint and a revenue standpoint, an option. But, you know, I think that's something we'll want to talk to you guys about at a further date.
Along the same lines, on your what's next list, I think that what's coming up pretty quickly is to review current standards. Mm-hmm. I would urge you to review the standards as they are currently enforced, not merely as they are written, because the level of enforcement may be different in different communities, and so effectively you've got a different program.
Well, we have an opportunity to do that, because we're developing the parking standards and the new zoning ordinance, and that's one of the things Charlie's group is going to look at, is seeing if there's some differentiation between parking characteristics on the Embarcadero versus parking characteristics in the downtown area. Before we close out, one of the things I wanted to see is we want to do, we're going to have another meeting to, once we get some ideas, analyze some of this data and you know, generate some alternative solutions, and it'd probably be a good idea. We're definitely going, would like to hold another meeting. If you folks are interested, that would be good. See if we can get some other folks.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm interested in learning what maybe some other coastal communities are doing to their parking so that we can sort of learn from them. In particular, on the Planning Commission, we've seen a number of proposals come in front of us where they are doing commercial space downstairs and doing 2, 4, 6 visitor, you know, bed and breakfast kind of things upstairs. And so they're trying to get this parking primarily to serve these hotel visitors. And it's right on the waterfront. And what and people always say, well, gee, you don't want a hotel visitor to have to park 2 blocks away and lug all their gear. Could you talk a little bit about how other dense waterfront communities handle that issue?
Yeah, that's a great example of some of the things we're starting to see, not only in coastal communities, but throughout California, as people are looking at new ways to develop combinations of uses that might be put together to better utilize land, to increase densities, to cut down on the amount of vehicle traffic. And mixed use like that is a great example of how you can use one particular parking profile and share that space. So the commercial use or the office use might have somebody down there during the weekday, 8 to 5, and then the bed and breakfast would have typically somebody show up at 6 o'clock or so and check in. And so what we'll do is come up with some parking examples and some standards that you might look at for ordinance adjustments to look at those shared spaces, those shared mixed-use proposals and share space so that you're not over-parking a particular site. Clearly, bed and breakfasts typically will have to have some parking either right on site.
One more thing to say about the quiet, if I may pick up where I was. Is that okay?
Yes.
The last point I wanted to make, aside from the fact that I think that you need to meld the parking with the pedestrian activities in the downtown area, is I think that the downtown area needs to have a reconciliation made between whatever parking management plan we brought up and the general plan. It really makes no benefit to anybody to have a parking management plan that does not have corresponding support in the general plan or in the implementing ordinances. You can kill me with kindness by providing the parking and then not allowing me to be able to put another floor on top of the building. So I think it may be beyond the scope of your service, but I think that's something that needs to be folded into this. Is if we're going to look at preparing a parking management plan, you need to look at how the general plan policies affect the downtown. At the same time, too, I think that it's really important to include a financing mechanism that is real. And by that I mean, it may not be pleasant for all of us in the downtown to have to sit there and fork over the dollars and the cents, but it may be very appropriate to create an assessment district, float the bonds, get the money in place, take care of that issue so that the businesses that are at a time when they should be redeveloped, we have a lot of buildings that should be redeveloped, have the incentive to take them out and then replace them and expand those businesses and make them more conducive to getting people to go downtown and be downtown. Thank you very much.
Yes, I think you, in answer to your question, from a policy perspective, we would address when the plan comes back through, when the general plan comes back through our local review process to respond to the Coastal Commission comments. So in answer to your question, yes, we agree. The general plan, if there are any policies that are generated here that may are inconsistent or need to be strengthened in the general plan context, they'll be addressed when the general plan comes back through our local process. And then you raised a question earlier about the issue about the parking requirements for existing businesses. What we have found, based on experience in other communities, is probably one of the most effective redevelopment tools that we could use is exempting parking requirements for existing businesses. And the presumption is if those businesses existed, at some point they were legal. And we weren't going to, and actually in the new zoning ordinance, which isn't in effect yet, there is an exemption for commercial properties that are deemed legal and conforming with respect to parking. However, though, if you added square footage on to them under that scenario, then you would have to park for the new square footage. But it pretty much grandfathered commercially zoned properties in the downtown area, which is different from the Embarcadero. And that's why we're trying to draw a distinction between the two areas. But we believe that's an effective tool to get at that, and actually you can use as a revitalization tool.
And I'm one of those ones that would benefit from the waiver. I don't know that the waiver right now would be lessened, and so everybody would benefit. I'm not suggesting that I want to pay more money, but the point would be that if you have a comprehensive plan with a financial mechanism that really works and covers everything, I think you'd have a lot of support from the businesses that are in the downtown.
Is this data available anywhere on the web?
No, it's not. But we will have it when we prepare the draft. We're still going over a lot of the information. We're still reviewing some of that and cleaning it up.
On the city website,
it will when it's released for review, yes. Anyway, unless you had any other questions, thank you very much for coming. We're looking at targeting another meeting, hopefully a public meeting, where we can have our consultants attend and share their suggestions and alternative solutions. Thanks again.
Thank you.